I hope you're ready to push into another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. I'd like for us to open our Bibles to Matthew chapter 15, verse number 21. And also, you should have a parallel ready in Mark chapter 7, verse number 24. Now, we know that Jesus fed the 5,000 plus men, probably 15,000 plus persons, on the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee, right at the beginning of his third year of ministry, which we're talking about the beginning of April, thereabouts, before the Passover of that particular year. And the end result of his feeding of those folks miraculously is that they got it into their heads they could take Jesus to Jerusalem and install him as the king, the Messiah, by force. And Jesus did not cooperate in that effort. I believe that Jesus made the decision right around this time not to attend Passover in Jerusalem in this particular year. Now, since he's inside the promised land boundaries, he would have been obligated by Old Testament law to go to Jerusalem. So I believe this is why he next goes to the district of Tyre and Sidon, which is nearby but outside the boundaries of the promised land. And by doing this, he would have avoided any type of confrontation that could have brought the conflict between him and the Jewish leadership to a head a year too soon, because he is going to die for our sins the following Passover. It may be that he stayed out of the boundaries of the Promised Land for 7 or 8 weeks afterward, taking us past the time of the Feast of Pentecost. The next feast that Jesus goes to Jerusalem for, that is mandatory, is the Feast of Tabernacles, 6 months before his crucifixion, and that's recorded in the Gospel of John. So let's focus on what happened probably in the spring and summer of 32, when Jesus decided to withdraw from the Promised Land into mostly Gentile territory, a place that he may not have been as well known or as easily recognized. So Matthew 15, verse 21 says, Jesus withdrew away from there. There we're talking about is the north coast of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus had been doing his ministry, to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Now that's only a few days' walk from the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, but it is still mostly Gentile territory. There's some Jewish community in those cities, but minimal. And when we first start this story, a lot of those Jews, because they are so close to the Promised Land, may have made the trip to Jerusalem for Passover anyway. So verse 22, behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon. So here, Jesus is trying to stay out of the limelight, out of the spotlight, but this non-Jewish woman finds out that he is a miracle worker. We can see a little bit more in the parallel for Mark. Let's read that. Mark 7:24. From there he arose and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon. He entered a house, did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. So this goes along with what I was just talking about. He's trying to stay out of the public eye. But it's difficult because word is spreading all over the place about him. I think it is possible that Jesus may have stayed here long enough that some of the Jewish people of this area had returned from their Passover celebration, or perhaps even Pentecost celebration, and came to the knowledge that there was a Jewish man in the area and that it was Jesus. And by this means, this non-Jewish woman found out about it. Verse 25. Immediately, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Now, the woman was a Gentile. Specifically, she was a Greek, is the language that's used here. Remember that almost 375 years earlier, Alexander the Great swept through the Middle East, and he brought Greek culture, Greek language, but he also brought Greek people with him. And many of those Greek people settled down in the regions of the Middle East and began living there as their new home. And so this person seems to be a descendant of sort from that time period. She is a Syrophoenician by birth. So she is a long-standing Greek family member here at Tyre and Sidon area. So she begged Jesus to cast the demon out of her daughter. Remember that the whole idea of demon possession is that there is an initial cooperation between the human and the spirit, but somewhere along the line, the human wants to get out of the arrangement, and the demon becomes oppressive, becomes abusive. It may be that this is even the situation where a person might ask for the demon's help or the spirit's help with their child and offers their child to the use of the demon, but then goes back on the deal. And so the demon, the spirit, becomes abusive of that child. So something like that has happened here. A relationship between a human being and a demonic spirit has fallen apart. And this is of great concern to the mother because harm is happening to her daughter. Now, Jesus is definitely able to be the authoritative third party to make the demon leave this girl alone. And that's what the mom wants. But Jesus ignores her. In our Matthew account at this point, Matthew 15:23, it says, "He did not answer her a word." And so she just keeps up begging him, crying out to him. And verse 23 continues and says, "His disciples came and begged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she is crying out after us.'" Now keep in mind, Jesus' apostles, who have been traveling with him, they are capable of casting out demons as well. But when he sent them out two by two, he told them that they were to extend this ministry, their miraculous work, only to those of the house of Israel, to Jewish people. And he's not offering to help at this point, and so neither are they. And so this woman just won't leave any of them alone until finally the apostles themselves are saying, "Jesus, just for the sake of getting her off our back, do something for her, or tell her to go away. Do something." Now, Jesus' response is recorded in both passages as pretty much the same thing. Jesus answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," which matches what he told his apostles. "But she came and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, help me.'" So she is aware that Jesus has this standard that he set up at this particular point. Now, we might find that a little bit unsettling, but keep in mind that Jesus is trying to do things in the most optimal way of saving everyone possible. So he is focusing his attention and his ministry on the Jewish nation right now, the group that's the most prepared to receive the knowledge of the atonement and of resurrection and of the kingdom on earth. And then we know the story happens later in the book of Acts. From there, it will expand into the Gentile world with great rapidity. But right now, he's on the earlier stage of that, only focusing on the Jewish people. But she wants him to make an exception. Now, his response, verse 26, is, "It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Mark has just a little bit more information. This is Mark 7:27. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." So you can hear what I was just talking about. Jesus is trying to stick to this structured arrangement, this structured approach, that the ethnic Israelis are going to be targeted first with the gospel, and then those that respond will be empowered to take the gospel to the Gentile world. But this woman wants an exception. Jesus' response, though, was, "Look, it's not appropriate for me to take the food that's intended to feed the children of the kingdom and then just toss it to the dogs outside." Now, the dogs that he's referring to are like the garbage-eating dogs, the mongrels that roam all over the neighborhood. They're not thought of in very nice terms. Now, some people take offense at the fact that Jesus connected Gentiles with being like garbage-eating dogs. But this seems to be more proverbial than anything else. It was just the idea, you don't take your kids' food off their plate and throw it out the back door to the junk dogs, do you? Now, her response is what triggers Jesus' decision to make the exception. In the Matthew account, Matthew 15:27, "Yes, Lord." So basically, yes, that's true. "Yet even the dogs," and this time it's the idea of puppies, the little dogs that belong to people, maybe not as many to the Jewish people, but remember he's in Gentile territory where some of the Gentiles kept pets, little puppy dogs. "Yes, Lord. Yet even the puppy dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." So yeah, you might not feed the garbage-eating dogs outside that don't care about you, but what about the pets that are hanging around that really want to be part of the family? Verse 28, "Then Jesus answered her, 'O woman, your faith is great. Be it done to you as you desire.' And her daughter was healed instantly," or from that very hour. She's not in the area. She seems to be at home. Mom is here on her own. Jesus responds to her verbalization of her heart's faith. And that is, if I'm here wanting to be part of this family, I should be able to benefit from God's grace. And that is absolutely true. One of the things we see in the Old Testament is several examples of where Gentiles have crossed the line from being part of a community that didn't believe in order to join the community of those that did believe. The most famous examples are those that are in Jesus' own family tree, like Rahab, the innkeeper slash sexually immoral woman that housed and protected the two spies. She wanted to become part of the community of Israel and demonstrated faith. The other one, very well known, would be Ruth, who abandoned her heritage in the country of Moab in order to come and be part and become part of the community of faith at Bethlehem. And by that, she becomes the great-grandmother of King David and therefore the great-grandmother many times removed of Jesus the Messiah. So this woman is expressing that same sort of, I know there's a lot of those that don't want to have a relationship with God, but I do want the relationship. So she expresses faith. The Mark passage makes it very clear that the little girl was not there. Mark 7:30, she went home and found the child lying in bed and the demon gone. And so the problem has been fixed. Now, we don't know exactly how much time passes, but my suspicion is that Jesus waits until the Feast of Pentecost has passed, which is in the summertime or at the beginning of summer. And so then Mark 7, verse 31 tells us, then he returned from the region of Tyre, went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee into the region of the Decapolis. And that helps us then understand where the next event takes place. Now, Tyre and Sidon is on the coast to the northwest side of the Promised Land, the northwest side from Galilee. So to go from there back to Galilee would take you down the Roman road, down past what's called Haifa today, Ptolemais back in the first century, and then you'd come across Galilee to the north coast of the Sea of Galilee, where Capernaum was located, but then go past that, across the Jordan River, and then along the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, which that's a Roman road that goes along that east side. And just partway down the coast, just past Cursi, the place where the swine went into the lake after the demons had entered into them. Just past there, we have a country change. We go from the country called Golanitis back in the first century, but we call it the Golan today. You go from Golanitis into Decapolis, which just literally means 10-city region. There are 10 Greek-named cities that were each of them kind of semi-independent and ruled themselves in the region around them, but they had a loose affiliation with one another. One of those cities is on the north, on the south east edge of the Sea of Galilee. That city was called Hippos, or Horse City, if you will. Hippos is the first of the Decapolis cities as you're going south along this Roman road on the east side of the Jordan River and on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. So Jesus has come into that area right there. There's a couple of more rural regions near the base, near the foot of the hill on which Hippos stands. And this is probably where Jesus stopped and began to minister again. Now, in the Matthew account, this is the way it tells us. It says, Matthew 15, 29, Jesus went on from there, meaning Tyre and Sidon, and then he walked beside the Sea of Galilee. So he comes to, you know, Capernaum area, then he comes around to the east side of the Sea of Galilee, into the Decapolis area near Hippos. And then it says, he went up on the mountain and sat down there. Now, on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, the terrain kind of junts up pretty quickly toward the east. And there's a plateau up above that develops and where there's some cities and things. So Jesus seems to be on the slope on this eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, up above where the Roman road was at, in a rural region, probably within sight of the hill on which Hippos was located, the city that belongs to the Decapolis region. And what's he doing there? Verse 30, thing that he always does. Great crowds came to him, and they were bringing with them the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others. And they put them at his feet, and he healed them, so that the crowd wondered when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. So he has engaged once again in ministry to the large crowds. And these are Jewish crowds, because Jews live over on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. They're not as in large a number as they are on the Galilee side, the western side, but there's still a pretty good number of them to get a big crowd out in this rural area not far from the city of Hippos. And he's healing them right and left. We've got something very specific in the Mark passage at this point. Mark 7:32. They brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. Often, when you can't hear well, you try to talk, but you haven't had the aural experience. That is, you haven't heard with your own ears what human speech sounds like. And so you're not able to pronounce well or formulate the words well. And so if you've got friends of yours, relatives of yours that have been deaf but are vocal, sometimes they have this quality to their speaking that is not precise. And so we refer to this as a speech impediment, a haltness. And so that's what this person has in his life. And so Jesus took him aside from the crowd privately. We've seen him do this before, where he tries to disengage from all this demand for his physical healing so that maybe he can spend more focused time on teaching. So he takes this speech-impedimented deaf man off by himself, and then he put his fingers into his ears, and after spitting, touched his tongue. So he's doing some sort of physical action here to demonstrate what's about to take place. You know, the ears are going to get unplugged. So, you know, the sticking into the fingers into the ears and then pulling them out. He said, I'm going to open your ears, is what he's telling him. And then spitting off to the side and then touching the tongue, or maybe even touching his own tongue. It's a little bit hard as to tell whose tongue is being touched here. He's basically saying, I'm going to make you be able to speak properly. So he's signing to him. And then, looking up to heaven, he sighed. So he had this, and then he said to him, Ephphatha, which is Aramaic, and it means be opened. And then his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. So Jesus does this miracle for this man in this pantomime way to allow him to go back to his life or to engage in a normal life. But he did exactly what, again, we've seen him do before, tried to keep the craziness down to a minimum. So Jesus charged them to tell no one. So the man and his associates, keep this under your hat. Don't go around talking so much about it. But the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. So they can't stand it. It is hard for them to contain their own excitement. And so they were astonished beyond measure, saying, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. And so that's where we're at right now, is Jesus is caught up once again in this growing crowd with a frenzy over the miracles that he can do. And the next thing that's going to set the stage for our lesson tomorrow is found here in Mark chapter 8, verse 1. In those days, when again a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd because they've been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them away hungry to their homes, they're going to faint on the way, and some of them have come from far away. So Jesus is concerned about this massive crowd that's joined him, and he's concerned they don't have enough food to make a trip away.